And a very good morning to you. It's Donald Kavanagh on the programme this morning with you until 12 noon, as the name of the programme suggests. A very, very busy show lined up. A very interesting first guest indeed coming up very shortly. But before we do anything else on the programme, let's remind you that the centrepiece of this programme, guests are wonderful, the conversation is wonderful, but the absolute centrepiece of this programme is your views, your perspectives and your take on what's happening in the Northwest and beyond. You can contact us by texting us or WhatsApping us on 086 60 25000. You can call us on 074 91 25000. You can use that number, as I say, for WhatsApp messages as well. And you can contact us via social media. It's at Highland Radio on Twitter. It's Highland Hub on Facebook. And don't forget, by the way, that we can be contacted via email. It's comments at highlandradio.com. Whatever is on your mind, we would love to hear from you. Looking at the daily papers, and as it's a Thursday, quite a few local papers. The Donegal News this morning, the main headline, standby aircraft to ease pressures. A standby aircraft has been brought in a bid to resolve the problems that have grounded multiple flights between Donegal and Dublin. Passengers have faced days of disruption due to what Emerald Airlines has described as technical issues with some of its planes. The Department of Transport spokesperson has confirmed an additional plane has been brought in to help ease that pressure. We know there were several cancellations in recent weeks, and there was a lot of worry about that. Headline on the Donegal Democrat this morning, the potential in West Donegal is huge. A blue wave that could attract 30,000 tourists a year, create up to 300 jobs, and has the potential to be one of the best walking trails in Europe is in the pipeline for Donegal. A feasibility study presented at the Glenties Municipal District on Tuesday says that it could be very important. The Burtonport Greenway would be merged into this initiative. It would see walkers start a trail in Letterkenny and finish their journey on Arranmore Island. Also a picture of the Mayor of Donegal Town, Pádraig Kennedy, using a timber frame to show the exact size of a power unit that's proposed to replace the existing cabinet to the left in black on the photograph there. And that's in the Diamond in Donegal Town. Interesting picture that. Tyrconnell Tribune. Main headline, survival of premature twins, a miracle. Remelton mother, a Remelton woman, Saoirse O'Hagan, who gave birth to twin boys 3 months prematurely on November 3rd, says it's a miracle that they're finally back home and doing really well. Saoirse, indeed, a former colleague of ours here on Highland from a number of years ago. And a lovely story there, picture of Saoirse and the two twins, Daniel Joseph and Tyler. That's on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune. Also, row over Milford's master plan. We reported on news yesterday that as of today, the consultation process on the new Milford Town Centre First Plan is open. You can contribute to that process in various ways. The details are on our website, highlandradio.com. And it's running until March 7th, if I recall correctly. But there is a row because Declan Meehan, who's manager of the local MDRC, has claimed his group's been excluded from further participation, even though up to the past year it's been playing one of the lead roles in this particular project. And he says it's really important that people in Milford get involved in the consultation, but there appears to be some sort of breakdown on that at the moment. Also, a story we covered yesterday, councillors want Panto back in on Greenan. Derry News this morning, Michaela reported this on Monday, a contested rate rise of almost 8% for Derry City and Strabane District. Council continues to work toward £250 million city deal. Ratepayers will now face a district rate increase of 8% for the incoming financial year. The rate was struck at a special meeting on Monday afternoon. It was supported by Sinn Féin, the SDLP, UUP, DUP and Alliance councillors. It was opposed by ENTHU, People Before Profit and the majority of independents. Moving now to the Nationals, and the Irish Independent tells us Greens plan to block €200 energy credit this summer. The coalition party wants a new cost of living package for the poorest. The Green Party will seek to block that fourth credit in crunch talks. It seems the Greens want the rollout of universal supports to be eased back with a new emphasis on targeted support. Also, Help to Buy fuels faster rise in prices of new homes. That's Charlie Weston's report there on the
front. Right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Thank you, Canis. Looking at the Irish Times this morning, Sturgeon stuns UK politics with surprise resignation. Scotland's First Minister to step down as soon as successor is chosen. Sturgeon denies short-term pressures played heavily in decision. The SNP preparing for its first leadership election in almost two decades after Nicola Sturgeon stunned British politics by announcing her intention to resign as party leader and Scotland's First Minister. Also on the front of the Times, GAA star sought bailout from Irish-American former player told prominent figure he was ill and needed urgent financial support. That's an ongoing discussion on that particular issue. Front of the Irish Daily Mail this morning, scrap plan to let teenagers change gender. Law allowing 16-year-olds to self-identify without parental consent is advancing through Dáil. Minister says current legal process is too onerous, but a leading expert says it's too young. Ministers need to listen to doctors and not allow teenagers aged under 18 to self-declare their gender without parental dissent. That's come from Professor Donal O'Shea, a consultant endocrinologist with the National Gender Service. He says politicians are scared to oppose transgender laws. That's on the front of the Irish Daily Mail. If you've got a perspective on that or something you'd like to say, by all means, please do get in touch with us. Moving on to the Red Tops and the Irish Daily Star this morning, Kinahan coke bust dopes, the main headline. Cartel boss used CCTV to stop cocaine workers from stealing. And Gardaí get days of footage inside the hidden drugs factory as a result. And also to the left of the Irish Daily Star this morning, a figure that will have people raising their eyebrows, particularly in Donegal, where prices aren't as bad. Pubs in Dublin's Temple Bar have been slammed for selling pints for nearly €10. Some boozers in Temple Bar are charging up to €9.95 for pints of lager and €8.95 for pints of stout. It's after the two biggest drink brewers, Diageo and Heineken, upped their prices in recent months. Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Again, it's the same story. Actually, this is the headline. €9.95 a pint is unbelievable. Temple Bar slammed for crazy prices. Tourist says, I thought it was a joke. And for sports fans, a story that many will say was inevitable. Arsenal 1, Manchester City 3, Blues back on top. Manchester City back on top of the Premiership after defeating Arsenal 3-1 in the Emirates Stadium last night. Irish Sun, RTE stars wages revealed, 145,000 pay cut. With Ray Darcy taking that, he picked up €450,000 in 2019, but new figures reveal he had trousered just at €305,000 in 2021. I can confirm, you'll be surprised to hear, that that's still more than I took home in fact, in quite a few years combined, truth be told. And it's one of those things, you know, you get they publish the salaries every year and people have big long discussions about them, and I saw a suggestion actually on one online discussion last night, a suggestion that this is actually a tactic that gets people talking about wages and gets people talking about one issue and actually doesn't get them talking about other issues pertaining to the organisation in question. And that is an interesting perspective, and one which is, as I said, it is an interesting one. And finally, the Farmers Journal. Fertiliser suppliers reap mega profits. Fertiliser suppliers reap windfall profits on the back of the unprecedented hike in farmgate prices last year. The Irish Farmers Journal can reveal inflated supply chain margins on sales of urea, CAN and 27255, which account for 83% of total imports, delivered up to an additional €200 million in margins to fertiliser importers and merchants. And it's interesting because we were told as a result of the war in Ukraine that a number of things, including fertilisers and other things, would be a lot more expensive. But it's interesting that so many companies, be it energy companies, be it fertiliser companies, on the one hand, we're told we have to face increased charges because of the war in Ukraine and the impact that's having on them. But then at the same time, these companies seem to be announcing huge profits. And that's kind of raising a number of questions, which are interesting, to say the least. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Don't forget, you can get in touch if you wish to do so. And before we do anything else, we are going to take a break. Back with our first guest after these. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Sorry to say that I am joined on the line by Minister Simon Coveney, the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. He'll host the first in a series of nationwide enterprise conferences entitled Building Better Business at the ATU campus in Letterkenny on Friday, March 3rd. Minister, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Donald. Thanks for having me on.
It is our pleasure. This is the first in a series of these Building Better Business conferences. It's telling that it's taking place in the ATU because we've long believed in the Northwest region and in Donegal in particular that the ATU, formerly LYIT, was an absolutely central block to development in the county, the region and beyond. And the fact that these conferences are taking place in ITUs across the country reinforces that perspective that these facilities are really vital in terms of building business.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's not a coincidence that we're starting in the Northwest first, you know, and hosting it in a technological university. You know, the Northwest is a really important part of our national economy. And so we're starting in the Northwest, and actually ironically after we're having 9 different meetings around the country and we're finishing in Dublin. But yeah, this is, you know, I've only been in this ministry for a couple of months, and I really wanted to get out around the country to speak to business people, to talk to them about the pressures that they're under, to make sure that we're providing the necessary supports and policy platform to allow businesses to grow, to expand, to employ more people right across the country. And there's going to be a big focus on, I suppose, 2 policy themes. One is digitization, and the other is a decarbonisation. That sounds kind of technical, but effectively this is about helping businesses to get online and to open up new business opportunities through digital access and so on. And there's a lot of government support to help businesses do that, and we wanted to talk to businesses about how best we can help them. And the other then is to try to drive down the carbon footprint of businesses, to help them with their energy costs, but also to help them reduce the amount of energy that they use in the first place. And again, there's supports and grants and so on to help them do that. And we'll have all the state agencies there, the local enterprise offices, Enterprise Ireland, IDA, SEAI, and if there are local business support infrastructures as well, we'll have them there. So it's something that I'd really encourage businesses to register for. You have to go onto enterprise.gov.ie, onto the website to actually register, so that we know who's coming. And then we can make sure that we have a successful event that has, like, this isn't going to be an event where a whole series of politicians get up and speak to people. It'll be much more interactive than that. All the agencies are there with effectively advice and support programs for businesses to help them get through what has been a difficult period, particularly in terms of managing energy costs.
One of the really important things when it comes to digitalization, particularly in the more rural parts of a county like Donegal, is access to broadband. Now, we are seeing through Udras the Gaeltacht, through Donegal County Council and through other bodies that are setting up digital hubs, and there's a lot of work going on. And what's coming through time and again because of those hubs is where there is good broadband, there is development. However, the converse is where there isn't good broadband, your prospects of getting good development is diminished considerably. With that in mind, obviously Donegal is one of the counties that's looking toward the National Broadband Plan and getting that rolled out as quickly as possible. Is there any way that can be expedited so that if businesses from the more isolated areas of Donegal are coming to this, you can give them some good news and say, well, look, you're going to have broadband in a matter of weeks, in a matter of months, rather than, as they've been told up to now, a matter of years?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, you're dead right. You know, if there's not good broadband connection, that's a huge inhibitor to business growth. You know, and we face that in other parts of the country as well. You know, in my own county in Cork, like, we've seen towns like Skibbereen that have had high speed broadband access have thrived, and other towns not too far away from there have had huge problems because they haven't had the same connectivity. So that's why we're spending literally billions of euros on rolling out high-speed broadband access to all of the 500,000 buildings that are effectively outside of the normal sort of commercial access to high-speed broadband through the National Development Plan, or through the National Broadband Plan. So look, we'll be trying to roll that out as quickly as we can, but there is pressure obviously from lots of counties to prioritise that rollout. But we are pushing the teams that are delivering the rollout of the national broadband plan to do it as quickly as possible, and if possible to fast track that, because you're absolutely right. You know, so many businesses will be prevented from reaching their potential if they can't get access to high speed information flow in and out through fibre optic cables, which is what the national broadband plan is all about.
Your party colleague Colm Markey highlighted this week that what we're beginning to see once again is a slight widening of a gap between the border and Midlands and Western regions and the East and the conurbation of Dublin. And it's coming, you know, becoming a matter of concern now that this region is starting to lag behind again. Is that something that's going to be in your mind as you're looking towards these conferences, looking towards developing businesses? And will that in any way prompt you and your colleagues in Cabinet to get more targeted supports to try and build up business and build up development in the regions affected?
Yes, is the straight answer to that. And, you know, Colm Markey is right to raise those concerns, you know, and he's not the only one saying it. We're very aware of it in government. That's why we have regional enterprise plans for each of the 9 regions. Dublin is a region as well, by the way. It's not just Dublin and the regions. We're trying to put specific plans in place for different parts of the country to allow economic growth. And by the way, it's working. You know, there's economic growth in every part of Ireland right now. And there's population growth as well in every part of Ireland, including Donegal and the Northwest. That doesn't mean we can't do more, and we should do more, which is why, you know, the ATU, in my view, is such a strategic location in terms of economic growth in the Northwest. But look, I mean, that's why we're coming there first. You know, we want to hear from businesses. What are their frustrations? What are their ambitions? How can we do more? And there is now opportunities that weren't there 5 or 10 years ago. You know, the attitude of a lot of big multinationals now is that they want to facilitate remote working. They want to allow somebody who's up in Glenties actually working for a multinational that may be based in Dublin city centre. You know, but if you've got the skill set now, there are remote working opportunities like we've never seen before, as well as, of course, then building businesses in Donegal as well. Rather than just facilitating people to work from there for companies that may be based in Dublin or Cork. But both, I think, are opportunities that we need to pursue. But as I say, those kind of remote working opportunities become much more difficult if you don't have access to high-speed broadband, which is a big priority for the government now to get rolled out, particularly in areas like the Northwest.
Obviously, in terms of your own purview, which is enterprise, you know, the conferences such as the one taking place on Friday the 3rd of March are very important. There's another huge industry in the Northwest, that of hospitality, restaurants, tourism providers, and a lot of those providers are going to be listening to you this morning, and they're going to be saying, there's something very straightforward you can do to help us. You can do it right now. Announce that the 9% VAT rate is going to stay. I'm sure this is being raised in Cabinet. I'm sure you and your colleagues are discussing this quite a lot. It's on the national agenda. Are we going to see an announcement that 9% VAT rate will be retained?
Well, look, I mean, actually a number of senior ministers will be meeting later on today to discuss that and a whole range of other things in terms of how we can support people through this cost of living pressure for businesses and for households and for families. So there isn't a decision on that yet. I mean, what I would say to you is, though, that to extend the 9% VAT to the end of the year would cost the state €500 million. So that's a big decision to do that. This was meant to be a temporary sort of injection of adrenaline, if you like, into the hospitality sector when it was under serious pressure through COVID and previously under pressure as well through recession. So, you know, we are weighing up whether it makes sense to continue that or to try to funnel that amount of money into other kinds of supports.
The argument, of course, from hoteliers and restaurateurs is going to be, right, keeping the reduced rate may cost the state €500 million. scrapping it and seeing some businesses close, seeing jobs lost, seeing profits go down, seeing the state's coffers from taxation go down. The cost might be spread differently, mightn't be more obvious, but there will be a cost if you don't keep it as well. And sometimes, you know, it seems the government is saying, oh, we will lose money, but doesn't factor in the fact that if we do the opposite, we will also lose money.
Yeah, no, I'm more than aware of that, I can assure you. And I've spoken to many hoteliers and restaurant owners and hairdressers and others in relation to this issue. So, I can assure you the government is listening to those concerns. There are lots of businesses in the hospitality sector that are under pressure. People will point to a lot of hotels in Dublin in particular charging significant amounts of money for rooms, over the last 18 months or so. But in many parts of the country, that hasn't been happening. And there are lots of hotels and restaurants that are, just about on the edge of viability. And we are aware of that. My job as a Minister for Enterprise is to support businesses, to make sure that the energy support schemes that are there are being accessed and are easy to access. The temporary energy support scheme, and of course, I'm making a case in relation to the lower VAT rate as well, as you would expect, because my focus is on supporting businesses, keeping them in business, and making sure that we're using every tool we have to do that. But we do have to weigh up where we spend money. I mean, this is the people's money we're spending; it's not the government's money. And if we're spending large sums of money to support businesses. Like 500 million euros, we need to make sure that it's getting to the people who need it most. And so we're weighing up all of those issues, and we'll make final decisions on that, I suspect, next Tuesday at a cabinet meeting.
I want to ask you about Brexit, because obviously in your previous Ministry of Foreign Affairs, you were heavily involved in discussions on this issue for a number of years. Now you've got a different perspective on it. You're looking at things like the protocol, things like North-South relations through the prism of business and cooperation and economic development. As the minister with responsibility for that now, and as the minister that has all that experience, as it were, in foreign affairs, are you confident that we can get this breakthrough that's being suggested for so long, that we can get the protocol sorted, we can get the Brexit deal finally sorted and put to bed, and we can move to the sort of long-term relationship between North and South, and indeed East and West, that's going to be to the benefit of all?
The short answer to that question, because it's a complex question, actually, if you go into the detail of it, but the short answer to that question is yes. I think it is possible to get a deal done. I think the political circumstances have changed. I think we have a British Prime Minister now who wants to get a deal. And we certainly have a European Commission that wants to facilitate that deal. And if both sides are willing to compromise, which I hope they are, then I think we can find a middle ground position that everybody can live with, where we have a protocol that can function, that can protect the all-island economy, that can protect Northern Ireland's place in the EU single market for goods, but at the same time respects Northern Ireland's place as part of the United Kingdom from a trade perspective as well, and therefore limit to the greatest extent possible any checks that are necessary on goods coming from Great Britain into Northern Ireland, because, of course, they may well then move on to other parts of the EU single market. So this is a difficult thing to get agreement on, because, of course, the protocol has become about identity-based politics in Northern Ireland, which makes compromise very difficult. So I do think it's possible for the negotiating teams. In fact, I think it's likely that at some point in the next few weeks, I'm hopeful that at some point in the next few weeks, there'll be a breakthrough between the negotiating teams. Whether or not that compromise that's agreed is accepted in Northern Ireland by political parties there, particularly the DUP, remains to be seen. Because, of course, not only do we have to get certainty in terms of how trade works between Northern Ireland and the rest of the island of Ireland, between Northern Ireland and Great Britain, but we've also got to get political infrastructure in Northern Ireland functioning again. We need an executive, we need an assembly that functions, we need North-South bodies, so that I can talk to and deal with my counterpart in Northern Ireland. And that's essential, by the way, for the well-being of the Northwest as well, because a city like Derry is a huge part of the Northwest's economy and social infrastructure. So for me, we need politics functioning again in Northern Ireland for the sake of people in Northern Ireland, but also for the sake of people in counties like Donegal and all the other border counties as well, who I think really want to see functioning, mature, sensible politics operating again. And, you know, as we approach the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, you know, the idea that we don't have politicians working with each other, talking to each other for peace and stability, you know, is really regrettable.
And, the cynical question, and so, though, the really cynical question is, will the DUP accept an executive with Michelle O'Neill as First Minister under any circumstances?
Well, if they don't, they're not accepting democracy. You know, I mean, let's be clear about that. You know, there was a democratic decision made in an election in Northern Ireland. Sinn Féin is now the largest party on the back of that election. And the agreements that we have in place means that the largest party selects the First Minister. And, you know, if the DUP were the largest party, Sinn Féin and other parties would have to accept a DUP First Minister. And if Sinn Féin are the largest party, well then, you know, I would expect as Democrats that all of the other parties would accept that too. Now, you know, that means a change in Northern Ireland. We know that in terms of the politics there. But I certainly hope and expect that all parties, if we can get these protocol issues resolved, will recognise that Northern Ireland needs a government. People there are facing the same challenges that we're all facing in terms of cost of living, in terms of pressure, in terms of energy costs and other household costs and so on. They need politicians, you know, coming up with solutions and supports for that, just like we have to do in government. And that's not possible at the moment in the way that it should be in Northern Ireland. And I hope everybody can reflect on that. I think, and I certainly hope, there will be a sensible compromise between the EU and the British government on how the protocol functions in the future. And I hope on the back of that sensible compromise, the DUP and others will be able to facilitate functioning government in Northern Ireland again so that we can get on with the work that we need to do together for the betterment of people both north and south.
Minister Simon Coveney, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And just a reminder that you'd be in Letterkenny on the 3rd of March, Friday the 3rd, for the launch of that Building Better Business conference in the ATU campus.
Once again, could I just say, it's Friday the 3rd of March. It'll be from 9 in the morning until lunchtime. It's really worthwhile for businesses to register for this. Just trust me on this. We're putting a lot of work into it. There'll be a lot of support there, a lot of information there to help businesses get through these energy pressures, but also to plan for the future. So I'd really encourage businesses to register, and they can do it on enterprise.gov.ie. That website will be open from this morning.
And no doubt you'll be working the room and speaking to people and sort of gauging the temperature.
Oh,
and you'll take the perspectives that come from that and those discussions back to Dublin as well. Minister, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Anytime. Cheers.
That was Minister Simon Coveney there. It's 25 to 10. Going to take a short break back after these. This is the 9 to Noon Show on Highland Radio. It's Donald Kavanagh with you on the programme until 12 noon today. A comment from a caller says, "Hi Greg, what about all the scams, the ones at Leinster House, i.e. nursing home scandal, disability allowances being taken off people, information being leaked to friends and people putting up posters and getting big contracts?" So asks a caller. Interesting story in the news this morning. The Transport Watchdog has received 229 complaints about taxis not accepting card payments or not having a card payment machine. Passengers sent them to the National Transport Authority between last September and the end of January. Every taxi has been required to accept credit and debit card payments since September. Now, we've been speaking to a number of taxi operators in the county here, and one of them gave us a very interesting story and said, look, it's all well and good, but here's one of the problems here. I do have a card doodah in my taxi. I took a passenger from Letterkenny to a rural area within about 20 miles. We got there. There was no coverage. Could not get the car to work. Passenger didn't have any money, but the passenger, you know, we had to, I had to say goodbye to the passenger and leave it at that. Now, what happened was, thankfully, the passenger was an honest person who came back the next day, found the taxi driver, gave them the money. But as the taxi driver said to us, look, if that passenger hadn't done that, I was out of pocket. So one of your problems is that if you don't have coverage, and there are many rural areas in a place like Donegal where you don't have coverage, then you are potentially going to be in a lot of difficulty. Now, I want to move on to the question of pet passports, because we got a message from a listener that said, I'm interested in thoughts I had about a conversation. We rent a holiday home in West Donegal. I had a booking for early March, who cancelled. They were very apologetic, but felt too worried to travel from Belfast to Donegal due to having dogs. They were worried they would be stopped by Gardaí for not having pet passports. I was aware of the passports from other areas, but I've never encountered any problems for visitors with dogs who travelled from Northern Ireland. I tried to reassure them, but they told me a work colleague in Northern Ireland was recently stopped in Donegal town by Gardaí and asked for pet passports for their dogs. Now, the couple were able to provide them, but were told their dogs would be impounded if the correct papers weren't available. Now, I must be honest and say this is something of a new one on me. So let's go and talk to someone who knows about these things. Dr. Gerard Rorty is a vet. Gerard, good morning.
Good morning, Dono. How are you?
Very well indeed, Gerard. Very well indeed. Gerard, first of all, clarify the situation for us, because I will be honest and say, now, I'm not a doggy person, but the idea of pet passports, I vaguely recall hearing about them, but I certainly had no idea they were required.
Well, it's not so much the pet passport or the microchip. There's three things that are required to travel in Europe between European countries. Your dog has to be, your dog, cat or ferret has to be microchipped, have to have a passport, but more importantly, they have to have a rabies vaccine. So this is something that has been there since 2013. So since
I think we may have lost Dr. Rorty there. We'll maybe just try and get Dr. Rorty back on the line, if you'll just bear with us for a moment. We just lost that call briefly. Just to, as I say, bear with us. But just as we say, I'll just go back to the letter we got, because there's a little bit more to it. The caller says, you know, I was shocked to hear this. We have numerous visitors from Northern Ireland who bring their dogs. It seems a bit crazy when we as a county, we rely on tourists, and if Gardaí are scaring them away with these regulations. I don't encourage going against regulations, but I can't see how this is the remit of local Gardaí. I'd be interested in hearing if anyone else has been stopped in the county and asked for proof of pet passports. Caller says, I don't wish to speak myself. I would prefer to remain anonymous. The caller is, as we said, a tourist operator in the county of Donegal. And it is an interesting question. We're just looking to see if we can get Dr. Gerard Rorty back and continue the conversation, because it's an interesting one. As I said, I will confess a level of ignorance myself on the matter. So as soon as we get Dr. Gerard back, don't forget, by the way, you can, if you have a perspective on this, you want to talk to us on this, you can text us 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can also you know, email us comments at highlandradio.com, or indeed you can... Yeah, okay, and I think at this stage we can go back and say good morning once again to Dr. Gerard Rorty. Gerard, sorry about that, we lost you there.
I know. So as I was saying, since 2013, the European regulation has been the requirement to have not only the passport and the microchip, but the critical one is the rabies vaccine. Now, I'm a wee bit surprised that the guards were asking for that, because it's actually the responsibility of the Department of Agriculture. And the Department of Agriculture, both north and south, have people with a lot of sense, and they have made a very sensible decision not to implement this European regulation. So it makes no sense at all. Rabies is a horrendous disease. There's somebody dies from rabies every 10 minutes in the world. I do a wee bit of work in Zimbabwe. Somebody dies from rabies in Zimbabwe every day of the year. But we last had rabies in the late 1800s. If you go back to 1833, there was an outbreak of rabies in Strabane. The Lord Lieutenant Strabane gave a direction that all dogs in Strabane that didn't have muzzles should be shot. Now, we had an outbreak of rabies in Dublin in 1898, and all dogs that didn't have muzzles were shot. There were 5,000 dogs put down. So the last cases in either Britain or Ireland was around 1901, 1902. Some of the soldiers coming back to the Boer War brought dogs back with them for rabies. And similarly, in the First World War, some of the soldiers brought dogs back. We've had no rabies since, and given we're an island, and given Britain's an island, there's no risk of us getting rabies, because any dogs coming in from elsewhere to either island have to have a rabies vaccine. But It's something that slipped in under the radar. It should have been sorted in 2013, and it wasn't sorted.
As you say, we are an island, and that is an interesting issue, because putting the geopolitical situation to one side, surely the situation should be, if the question is, can rabies hop from island to island, from landmass to landmass, should the island of Ireland be treated as an island for these purposes, rather than go down the geopolitical line of saying that Northern Ireland is part of the UK, and once you cross the border at Bridgend or at Killeigh or wherever, effectively you're going from the European Union to a non-European Union country. The reality is, this is an island.
Well, exactly. And, you know, irrespective of your political stance on the protocol, and I was listening to you talking about Simon Coveney earlier, so irrespective of whether you're nationalist, unionist or other, or which of the three tribes you're in, I think everybody will agree with Edwin Poots. And Edwin Poots said this is total nonsense. We have a common travel area between Britain and Ireland. We should have a common pet travel area between Britain and Ireland. But again, it was something that should have been identified in 2013. 2013, somebody should have said, listen, this is ridiculous, expecting dogs going from south to north, or indeed dogs going from Larne to Stranraer. Now, it has fair old financial consequences. I'll give you a case in point. A lot of the abandoned dogs in Donegal are rehomed in Scotland. So charities end up spending a lot of money. A lot of those charities are a bit like Donal, a bit like yourself and myself, Donal, insofar as we'd obey the last letter of the law, and we'd want to have everything right. We'd want to have our TV license, we want to have the car tax. And similarly, if we're required to have a rabies vaccine, we'll go out and get it. So that's an extra €100 those dogs are all getting to be rehomed in Scotland. There is no need to be spent at all. But really importantly, this is affecting tourism, because if you go onto the Bord Fáilte website, or the Irish Ferries website, or the Department of Agriculture website, it's very clear. If you're bringing dogs into the Republic, they've got to have the rabies vaccine. Now, you just don't go and get a rabies vaccine and be ready to go. You've got to allow an immune period then to last for about 3 weeks, so you've got to wait then. And in addition, there can be a lot of side effects. So a lot of people might say, well, do you know what?
Hello? Yeah, and George, yeah, and one of the things is that there's going to be a difference between cross-border travel in this context. The caller we had, the listener that contacted us specifically was doing so. They are a accommodation provider in Donegal, and they've had guests from Northern Ireland. Now, that guest could have been from Ballymena or Belfast or Downpatrick or wherever. But the reality is, you're going to have a situation where there's going to be people in Derry who have relations in Buncrana. There's going to be people in Newton who have relations in Strabane. There's going to be people in Raphoe who have relations in Ballykelly. And they're going to be hopping over and back to visit each other all the time. Granny's going to see grandchildren. Auntie's going to see nephews and nieces, and the chances are they're piling the dog into the back of the car and going over and back regularly.
They are, but the good news is I know our Minister for Agriculture, I know Charlie McConnell, is very actively looking at this at the moment. He has set up a working group to persuade the European Commission that there's no risk, as you say, if a dog from Derry coming out the beach and thaw and bringing rabies, or somebody from Bangor going on holidays in Portneau bringing rabies, or vice versa, somebody deciding to visit Granny in Dungiven and bringing the sheepdog with and taking rabies that way. Now, and again, going back to the Northern Ireland Protocol, it highlights that, you know, there are small anomalies that need to get ironed out. But the feedback from my veterinary colleagues, both north and south, as I say, as Minister McConnell is on top of this, he's looking at this, and I think it will be ironed out.
Now, I want to go to Councillor Michael McClaverty, who's on the other line. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning, Michael.
It's great, surely, we've got away now for whatever, dozens and dozens of years, Gerald's pointing out that we're out of rabies, and touch wood and please God that'll remain into the future, that we never have rabies. But all it takes here, because we're an island, all it takes is for one dog to slip in, possibly onto the radar, like a plane, a boat, whatever, car, other means to get here. Yeah. All it takes is the one dog to slip in, and all it takes is, well, done, to be fair, and I have to say this, and I don't mind saying it in the air, a lot of dog owners are getting very relaxed with their dogs locally as well. They'll be running on the beach wild, they'll be running after sheep. No, when you have that going on, when you have, no, if you're a dog owner, to be fair, regardless whether you have a poodle or you have an Alsatian or you're something bigger,
yeah,
it's your responsibility. The buck stops with you. It's totally your responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think anyone would argue with that. And I think, in fairness, yes, the specific issue being spoken about is sort of the movement of dogs within the island. Now, certainly, I know everyone would agree that we must be absolutely vigilant when it comes to protecting against rabies and dogs coming in from outside in areas that do have rabies. But I think the risk within the island, particularly travelling from north to south, from Derry to Donegal or vice versa, it's a very different question to a dog being smuggled in on a plane. Is that something you would accept?
Well, of course it is, yes, Donald, yeah, to be fair. Mm. But it's just back to the same thing again. Like, I mean, even probably for a certain generation today, teenage, early 20s, so on, they mightn't even be aware what rabies is. For example, when I was growing up myself as a child, possibly yourself too, don't know, Jesus, every night and before the 6 o'clock news, it was on continuously.
Indeed.
For months, if not years, about rabies. You recall the ads from the late 70s, early 80s, you recall the ad in particular.
I know exactly the ad you mean, Michael. I think I have a few years on you. Yes, I do remember that ad. I remember it very well.
Well, I mean, that ad now, or similar ads to it, I haven't seen a rabies ad on TV in years and years, to be fair.
That is true.
And it's all down, at the end of the day, it's all down to education. Because who knows, like, where anybody could come on a dog, potentially somewhere outside of Ireland, what rabies and so on, and not have a clue what it is like.
Absolutely.
So I think, to be fair, when people are oblivious to it, it doesn't help things either. That such a thing exists.
Absolutely, and you are right. We do need to be wary of it. Jared, I just want to ask you finally, and I absolutely know you are not a spokesperson for An Garda Síochána, and I don't expect you to answer on behalf of An Garda Síochána, but anecdotally, have you heard of Gardaí clamping down on dogs coming in from Northern Ireland into Donegal? I mean, I wouldn't have thought it would be huge on their priority list.
No, what I did was I just informally, I used to work on Stirling, so I informally talked to my colleagues in Belfast, former veterinary colleagues in Belfast, and they said that Edwin Poots has actually given an instruction for no surveillance whatsoever for dogs coming in from the Republic or in from Scotland into the six counties looking for passports. So they're ignoring the regulation.
Yeah.
In terms of what's happened in the south, as I said to you, it's the responsibility of the Department of Agriculture. Now, the vets in Rafo that would have that remit are very sensible, very logical. They know a way lot more about rabies and zoonotic risks than I do. And they have made the totally correct decision not to implement this and to ignore that. I've never, I'm kind of shocked that any guard would actually start looking for, pet passports or microchips or evidence of rabies vaccines because, as I said, the word very much coming from Ag House down, and I suspect it's coming from the minister, is very sensible. He says, don't implement this till we get sorted and get removed from the statute book.
Yeah. And as you say, Minister Charlie McConnell is looking into this, and hopefully this will be resolved.
He is actually a committee set up, and they're working with the European Commission to remove this requirement.
Well, that will be good news for our correspondent and for others as well. Dr. Gerard Rorty and indeed Councillor Michael McClafferty, I thank you both very much indeed for that.
Thanks, Donald. All the best, Michael.
Okay, okay. Thank you both. It's the 9 till noon show. It's just gone 8 minutes to 10 o'clock. The weather forecast, Met Éireann, tell us it'll be dull and misty this morning with some fog and patches of light rain or drizzle. It will brighten up for a time, though, as the morning goes on, but don't leave the coats behind. Further outbreaks of rain and drizzle will be moving in later on. Highs this afternoon, nice and warm, 11 to 14 degrees Celsius. Southwesterly winds will increase fresh through the afternoon and into the evening. And this is, as we say, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25000.
And as I say, it's Donal on the programme with you this morning until 12 noon. Just want to give you some of the comments that have been coming in on the issue we've just been discussing there with Gerard Rorty and Councillor Michael McClafferty. Connor says, I wonder where all the dogs that came in with their owners from war-torn countries checked out for vaccines, etc. I strongly suspect the answer to that is yes. I think any dog coming into the country is going to be checked, and they will be taking a lot of care to do that. Earlier on in the newspaper headlines, we mentioned the transgender debate, which is ongoing. Caller says, whoever those ministers, RTDs, are who are afraid to oppose the transgender surgery issue, they should oppose it, because transgender or transition surgery is an insult to God. That's from Mary. And two strangers from the broadband company called separately last week, according to a caller, looking for way leaves to put poles and cables on our land. There are four houses on this 6 mile long stretch of road. Fibre optic is old hat. A mobile wider area network would make more sense than poles and cable in 2023. Why does everything have to involve digging holes? It's ridiculous, so says a caller. Another caller says that national broadband plan, why is the government throwing billions into a private company that the state won't even own one share in? That's another question that has come from one of our callers. We were speaking earlier to the Enterprise Minister, Simon Coveney. And in response to the Minister for Enterprise, caller says, please engage with the Minister for Housing and our local representatives, raid the defective blocks crisis. Economic development is absolutely essential. But right here, right now, our homes are crumbling and this is a priority. Yesterday, Councillor Donal Mandy-Kelly, the Mayor of Letterkenny and Milford, told Highland Radio he is too busy to attend an upcoming demonstration in Dublin regarding this. He needs to prioritise his engagements as the defective concrete block crisis unfolds and causes more and more devastating consequences on a daily basis. The voice of Donegal needs to be represented by our local representatives to ensure equality with those living in Dublin. We all have other commitments and engagements, but must put our shoulders to the wheel to minimise the devastation and trauma caused by the biggest crisis of our time. And so says a caller. Another caller, hello and good morning. I know you are sick listening to this, but it's a joke in the emergency department in the hospital. My daughter went in, urgently sent in by her GP. She is on a wheelchair in there since 10 yesterday morning. Many more very sick and elderly people are sitting on hard wheelchairs, not even a blanket to put around them. If someone doesn't do something, someone will die, as I speak for all who are there. It's so unfair. It's a joke. I feel so sorry for anyone who have no one belonging to them. That's a call from one of our listeners. And the situation in the hospital obviously remains a very difficult one for everyone involved. And hopefully, caller, your daughter will be seen soon and we can find some resolution.